Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss and debate all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of the show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notescene@gmail.com. This week, Tyler and I are doing something special. We will be ranking the 10 biggest scene bands of 2018. We ranked the 10 biggest bands at the beginning of last year, and a lot has changed for these bands and their careers. And oh, how this list has changed as a result. All right, let's go. How's it going, Tyler Sharp?
It's going good, man. How you doing?
I made the mistake of clicking on Spotify's 2000s and chilling playlist.
Oh,
which
boy.
Which takes you through all the big rock songs from 2000 to 2010.
Dang. What was on there?
Everything from The Killers, The Fall Out Boy, to just all the generic radio rock. kind of ruined my day, low-key.
Oh, no. Like, ruined your day in a good way or a bad way?
It was just a whole decade, man. You know? It's weird. Like, we never really realized we were out of the 2000s until, like, the late 2010s, I feel like. You know? The 2000s,
now.
Man.
Yeah.
They were a thing, you know? Like, it's over.
It's over, dude. And so much has changed.
So, we're going to get into the top 10 biggest scene bands in a moment, but I got some things I think we got to say about the Grammys first, which were kind of a shit show. So I think we should get our reactions on tape while everything is still fresh and flowing. So started on a bad note, right? Lorde was the only Album of the Year nominee who was not allowed to perform solo. And she was the only Album of the Year nominee who was female as well. So big problem there. And, you know, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know Lorde is kind of what I do. So it was a very bad note for me. It was something I thought they were going to correct, you know, very quickly. I thought the Grammys would be like, oh, this is a clear big PR error and oversight. But they didn't. They just kind of rolled with it. And that was a bad start, I thought. It was a very bad omen for the start of the show.
Yeah, it kind of felt like the Grammys stumbled out of the gates this year and just barrel rolled down the front stretch of whatever track they were on. Once the show started, it just got worse and worse. My two biggest things, if I could take away from the entire show last night, was Ed Sheeran winning Best Pop Vocal Performance over Kesha.
Right.
Ed's Shape of You won over Kesha's Praying, and that is quite possibly the most ridiculous thing of the entire show. Just when you compare those two songs, and Praying was an actual top 40 hit, and in today's world it's a very unconventional pop song. I mean, it's a piano ballad, and she hits that crazy note in the song, and then backed with her entire story of the thematics behind that song. I think it was blatant that she deserved it, but again, the Grammys play it safe, and they gave it to Ed, who, because, and I don't know for sure, but I think it was kind of obvious, he didn't show up as a way to stick it to the Grammys because he wasn't nominated for any of the top three categories. So there's so much to unpack with that.
Yeah, the Kesha thing is, you know, Shape of You, biggest song of last year, fine, it could win Song of the Year.
Right.
But when we're talking about the category of vocal performance,
right,
Kesha is a much better singer than Ed Sheeran, and particularly on that song, Praying. That vocal performance is fucking phenomenal.
It's ridiculous.
It's undeniable. She hits one of the most insane notes I've heard, you know, a singer hit in the last 5 years. And there's no reason that she shouldn't have won. So that was one of the particular things that was problematic, which feeds into the overall narrative of the fact that only one female artist won during a telecast. And that was Alicia Cara, who won for Best New Artist, which... You know, it's funny because I feel bad because I really wanted Lil Uzi Vert to win that category. But when you actually compare it, you know, like, yeah, Uzi had a lot of success. EXO Tour Life was a huge song, but, you know, I think when you actually look at it, they did make the right pick because Alicia Cara, she just had the biggest fucking year ever. I mean, Scars,
yes.
Pure Beautiful was an undeniable smash hit. You couldn't escape it. You know, Stay was huge. I think she was on a Marshmallow song. Like, she's just been everywhere. For somebody who is so new and so fresh, her presence was truly everywhere, and she had a huge impact on music this year. So I thought it was a fair pick. But, like, there's no reason why Kesha didn't win awards. There's no reason why there weren't more female artists who didn't win awards. You know, I think Lorde should have won Album of the Year, personally. But, you know, that's just me. SZA was nominated for, like, 5 awards and she didn't win any.
True.
And, you know,
true.
There was a lot of hype at that. But, yeah, the elephant in the room. Fucking Bruno Mars. What, 9 awards, right?
Somewhere around there. But he swept the big three, which is
right.
The most ridiculous and most Grammiest move that they ever could have made. It's so ridiculous how safe they are.
I have to say, like, you know, and we do this every year, Tyler. We bitch about the Grammys. It's part of life and being in the music industry. But, like, this is the first time since maybe when they gave the Grammy for Album of the Year to Beck that I felt like I actually questioned, is the fucking committee trolling us? Like,
yeah.
Giving this many awards to Bruno Mars and giving Album of the Year to Bruno Mars. I mean, this guy is not a musician. He's an entertainer. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? This is the thinnest music out there. It's thin, it's shallow, it's very gold-plated, not gold, to borrow from one of our favorite music critics. You know what I'm saying? It's just not Album of the Year material, especially going up against something like Kendrick, which was way more culturally impactful and sold a lot more. You know, it's just, they seem so out of touch by picking Bruno Mars here. He's just like hot air, you know? There's nothing there. That album does not connect emotionally with anyone. It's not art. It's entertainment. And that's
exactly. It's for soccer moms across middle America. Like, that's who that album was made for. And any other parent who's trying to relive the 80s in a new wave sheen. Like you said, those songs don't mean anything. Kendrick actually put some sort of social context behind the right. thematics of his music, and outside of the thematics, like you said, that record dominated streaming the first 3/4
totally.
Of the year. Like, it was Kendrick's year.
I mean, he turned non-hit singles into hit singles. So he turned songs that weren't, you know what I mean, radio friendly, and they were just hit singles on the radio somehow.
It was
Be Humble. It's not exactly. It's not a pop song, but it was on the radio every minute. You know, he did it. And I think Lorde made a fantastic album, and even and Jay-Z at least made a personal album that was like an artistic statement, you know. Bruno Mars just
it was a statement.
And you know, I'll say this, like, look, I get it. If you are the type of person who, you know, you're driving to the store and 24 Karat Magic comes on and, you know, you just want to bop around and dance in the car and listen to it, you know, that's fine. You're a huge part of the problem, but okay, like, let it slide. You know, you got to do you. It's just this guy, Bruno Mars, 2 Super Bowls now. He is just a scourge on music. And I think I can end my rant there.
Yeah.
It is just obscene. I felt that was the most out of touch I've seen the Grammys ever.
Totally. And before we move on real quick, the viewer ratings were in and it was down 24% from last year. And it was the lowest watched Grammy since 2009. The committee just doesn't have, they're so
yeah.
unaware of what the youth of America is listening to right now.
Bruno Mars gets Album of the Year for 24 Karat, you know, the thinnest, just fucking contrived thing ever. And meanwhile, Beyonce's still out here trying. You know what I mean? It's
right.
like, it's so ridiculous. It can really get you upset because that's all we have, you know. And what were we upset about last year, right? It was like the rock category. I think
Cage the Elephant won over Panic,
yeah.
Blink.
Cage the Elephant, who don't matter anymore, who didn't matter that year, who didn't sell any records, lost, you know, won over bands like Panic, who had just an incredible run, Blink,
mm-hmm.
who did an incredible thing,
mm-hmm.
and even Weezer, you could make a case. They had their biggest single in like 10 years, you know, Cage
sure.
the Elephant, you know, it's like, it's almost as if they were like, who sounds the most like Foo Fighters, you know what I mean? Like, can we just pick that? And so that was our problem last year, you know, and this year it was just...
And even
just,
last year, it was Beyonce versus Adele for the big three. And Adele
right.
beat out Beyonce every time. And now we get Jay-Z getting beat out by Bruno Mars every time this year. It's like,
And
what?
Bruno shouldn't be coming into the Grammys like Adele. He's not fucking Adele. He shouldn't be
Right.
sweeping. Adele's role is to sweep. That Bruno, oh man, I just,
I
yeah.
literally jumped off my couch last night after the last award got announced. So I was just yelling no. I was like, no, this cannot be happening right now. I couldn't believe it. And the backlash has been real. So hopefully the
It's
committee gets
been
their
real.
shit together.
I see a shakeup coming because
There's gotta be.
this year was exponentially worse than last year. It's
Absolutely.
getting bad. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But yeah, okay. We gotta move on, Tyler. Let's get into the 10 biggest scene bands of 2018. A lot of bands have moved around. This list has shuffled. Some bands have fallen off. But before we get into the 10 biggest scene bands, I want to mention real quick the bands that we are not going to be including that you may think are scene bands or emo bands. And that's the Breakouts: Fall Out Boy, Panic at the Disco, 21 Pilots, and Paramore. These are bands that have their roots in the scene, but they're just not scene bands anymore. They're not on that level. These are pop stars now. They have transcended the scene in a sense. You know, once you enter top 40 radio, like Paramore did, like Fall Out Boy did, once you've sold platinum records like Panic at the Disco and 21 Pilots, you just kind of can't be compared to these bands on this scale. So we're strictly staying in the scene for this list, like we did last year. And with that, number 10, the 10th biggest band in the scene is Beartooth. What do you think about this one, Tyler Sharp? How are you feeling about Beartooth lately?
When their last album dropped, I would have said no way that they break into the top 10 biggest scene bands. Because, like we said on the show before, it stumbled out of the gates, but they had a single catch on rock radio. And while rock radio matters less now than it ever has before, it helped the band. And as we saw their Warped Tour sets this past summer, they were drawing in the biggest crowds on the whole tour. So, this band has momentum. There's a lot of hype behind their third album. And I'm happy for him. I loved Disgusting. It was one of my favorite albums of 2014. And Caleb is a genuinely like a great songwriter. I was pretty disappointed with the last album. I felt like there wasn't really any progression, but we'll have to see. From the teasers he's
Yeah,
been
we'll have to
showing
see
so
about
far,
that.
it seems like he's going back to Disgusting, which is whatever, but I'm not sure if that's what he needs to really grow this thing.
Maybe lyrically, but you know, I could see Red Bull kind of like, hey, you know, we've got some radio success here with
Right.
what you
You
did on the last album. Let's kind of
need
build
a
upon that. But you
single.
know, Aggressive came out, you know, and it sold 16,000 copies first week, which I thought was really impressive for Beartooth. But like you said, the album just kind of faded at first, and you know, that single Hated just caught fire and connected with people in such a way that it really just fucking just charged this band back to life. And you know, they had huge crowds on Warped, like you said, and now there is a real palpable hype for the new album.
Yep.
And that is why they are the 10th biggest band on here. They were not on the list last year, and they have just we were almost ready to count them out, and they've climbed their way back into the conversation, which is
Yeah.
pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's in part to them beginning to build more momentum and other bands falling off super hard. The reason why they made it in the top
Definitely, definitely. Okay, so number nine, the ninth biggest band in the scene right now is Falling in Reverse. A band we probably thought were gonna fall off the list this year, but surprised us. They came back with Coming Home, which was a shakeup in sound for the band, but it sold 19,000 copies first week, which surprised the hell out of me and Tyler, you know. They went on a very successful tour. They, you know, they have over 1 million Spotify listeners, which compare that to Beartooth. Beartooth have about 900,000 Spotify listeners. So Falling in Reverse, you know, just consistently, at this point, you'd say they're off album cycle. You know, the cycle's kind of died down. They're still having over 1 million Spotify listeners. That's really impressive. And what it is just Ronnie Radke. He just has that core fan base that is just still there, and they're still riding for him, I think. And the album turned out, Coming Home, to be one of the better scene albums to come out in 2017, which was surprising. You know, songs like what's the one we really love? I always forget its name.
Hanging on.
Hanging On. Songs like Hanging On, yeah. And it was a surprise.
Yeah, definitely. I was not expecting to like Falling in Reverse's new album that much in 2017, but especially compared to the other shit we got, that was definitely one of my top favorite releases of the year. It really surprised us with a very ambient, ethereal, Angels and Airwaves post-hardcore album. That was really cool to see. It was far from a perfect album. It had a lot of shit filler tracks on it, but like you said, Hanging On, Fuck You and All Your Friends, the title track.
Love that song.
Great songs. I will say, you know, the album has really not sold that much other than first week. I think last time I checked, don't quote me on this, but it was around 35,000. So, yeah, I mean, this album hasn't really sold shit.
I think it's broke 40 at this point.
40? Okay, 35 to 40, somewhere around there. Still, it's really not that good for a cycle. That being said, they did the album with basically no press campaign for it.
Yeah.
They refused everything, or they didn't pursue it. I don't know either way. And since the album has dropped, they really haven't done anything. They played one Warped Tour date. They played some dates with Trapped or some butt rock band. I can't remember what it wasn't. Trapped, so you but had it was something.
You had no real support for the album. We were talking about it. Like, what's Epitaph Records, their label? What are they doing? You know, there was no real support. There's no rollout. There's no big music video. There's no Alone video to get everybody talking, you know? And Coming Home as a lead single was an odd choice. You know, I think set up people's expectations to think the band was really moving further away from their sound than they actually ended up doing on the album. It was still a Falling Universe album, whereas Coming Home, not really a Falling Universe track. You know what I mean?
Right. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, the album is kind of all over the place in a way. You've got your post-hardcore Escape the Fate era Ronnie tracks like Hanging On and Fuck You and All Your Friends. And then you got the really big tracks that are almost like MCR-ish maybe. And then you've got like the bonus tracks, which were like Fashionably Late era Falling in Reverse. So he kind of tried to bring everything to a climax here. So I am actually kind of interested to see what Ronnie does next album, because regardless of how the cycle has done it, I think it's done well enough to warrant another, you know, there's still money to be made off Falling in Reverse.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
We're going to get another chapter of the band.
Ronnie just as a brand is continuing. And like you said, just the fact that there was no support behind this album, and they've managed to get radio play. Like, I think Superhero is on the charts right now.
It was,
you know,
all the way up to about 22 on rock radio. It's dropped pretty hard now.
You got to point out, though, that's Falling in Reverse's first radio ever.
Right?
They've never had radio play before. And Epitaph is not really particularly good at pushing radio singles. And so that's impressive that, you know, the band have managed to get on rock radio. It's just, this band is surprised and impressed. And I think that's really a big reason why they're on the list this year. And Ronnie just sort of retaining that core fan base. I'm sorry to all of you Ronnie haters out there, but he's still here. He's still doing it.
He's surviving beyond all the big scene bands. And that's you got to give it to him for that.
Yeah. Like, you know, I definitely would have thought Paris would be bigger than Falling Universe by this time this year. But it's just it's not the case.
It's crazy, man. All right. I think we're beyond Falling now. What's next?
Number 8, biggest scene band, Black Veil Brides.
Boo.
I tried to keep them off here. I tried. But, you know, somehow Black Veil Brides, their newest album, Veil, came out and it sold about 25,000 copies first week, which is impressive. At this point, any scene band, I think we got to start saying, any scene band that can pop over 20,000 first week are one of the biggest scene bands. It's just, you know, we just saw, you know, Of Mice and Men sell 9,000 copies. We saw Sickly Sirens sell 12,000 copies. You know, we saw August Burns Red sell, 18,000 copies? We're seeing all these.
It was 17, yeah.
Yeah, these big scene bands not being able to crack 20,000 anymore, whereas in 2012, they could crack 50,000. And I think maybe 20,000 is just like the new benchmark for first week sales. And the fact that Black Veil, you know, were able to crack it is impressive, even though if you look back at their past, Wretched sold 40,000 first week, which was huge, you know? And then the next album after that, the self-titled one, we saw dropped 29,000 copies. But again, this band, like Falling Universe, still has a million monthly Spotify listeners. And I think you can offer your take on this, Tyler, but my take is that this band is not growing in any way. It's just, this is the Black Veil Brides army, the BVB army, sort of castling up around their band and showing their support that first week and showing their support by doing those streams. And this band is going to carry that core fan base for pretty much forever at this point. They have reached their too big to fail phase, like kind of where AFI were with the Blood album. This is kind of where I see BVB at this point.
Yeah, I totally don't disagree with that. I think Black Veil Brides are just always going to have that core BVB army that is going to ride for them no matter what shit they put out. But something that needs to be said about this album and another band that they're on tour with right now, what they did with their tickets leading up to this album was that if you bought a ticket, you had an option to...
Why you gotta out the guys, Tyler? Why you gotta out them?
It has to be said. It has to be said. So if you bought a ticket to their tour with Asking Alexandria, you had an option to redeem a copy of each of the band's new albums. Asking, while this promotion was going on, their album came out about a month before Black Veil, so they weren't able to reap all the benefits of the ticket pre-orders, you know, that would count towards album sales. Black Veil's went all the way up until they released their album on, the second week in January or something like that. So those numbers are highly inflated. And from what I've read in certain places, Billboard's going to take a stop to that. I mean, that's how Pink right. sold 400,000 first week last year. I think Kenny Chesney had a live album that went to number one and did like 250,000. Just ridiculous shit that doesn't need to happen.
Hey, man, Kenny Chesney's coming here and playing to a 50,000 person stadium pretty soon. So, I'm not going to. I'm just saying,
yeah. These numbers aren't, if we're going to count right. ticket sales as album sales, the numbers don't represent the popularity of that piece of music anymore. It represents the popularity of the artist. So that's true. Where it gets kind of convoluted here. And I don't think 25K is necessarily representative of where Black Veil Brides are right now. But regardless, they counted. And like you said, they have over 1 million monthly listeners on Spotify. They are on cycle, obviously, because the album yes. just dropped. So I like to point that out, because when they were off cycle, they were all the way down to like 700,000. So
yeah, and what we're talking about is when a band are on record cycle, when singles are dropping, right, albums coming out, right. bands have higher streaming numbers. It's just kind of, it's how it is. And right. when bands fall off cycle, their streaming numbers go down. So to say Black Veil have 1 million on cycle, it would not be as strong of a statement to say they have 1 million off cycle.
Exactly. So there's a lot that goes into BVB's numbers right now, but we're making this list as it stands. And right now, they're just where they're at right now. I mean,
they're not
knows?
Growing. They're continuing to fall down this chart.
They're continuing
they're,
to
they're
fall.
Slow descent.
They're able to stunt their downslope yeah. better than, say, Sleeping yeah. with Sirens or Of Mice and Men.
Like next year when we do this, they'll probably be number 9. And then the next year, they'll probably be number 10. And then they might stay at number 10 for a while. You know, they're just going to hang around. But yeah, it's like a band that can do 20,000 first week, like Black Veil, 1 million Spotify streams, it's kind of in line. You know what I mean? So it's like the streaming does kind of back up the record sales here in a little bit, in a way that doesn't totally make me alarmist about the ticket thing. You know, I don't know how many people actually did that. So
yeah, right. So it's hard to say because they didn't debut in the top 10, so we didn't get Billboard's report of what albums right. were and weren't counted through
Which,
the ticket caveat.
It's very tough for a rock band to debut in the top 10 now because they're counting streaming, and we have these just rap streaming giants, you know, like
exactly.
Like Uzi or XXX or whoever, you know what I mean? Just always, you know, or Post Malone. Or the fucking Greatest Showman soundtrack. You know, you just have these streaming giants and stuff just knocking bands. It's really hard for a rock band to get in the top 10 right now because rock bands don't have high streaming numbers compared to pop or rap.
That's still, you know, this is a totally different conversation, but the fact that rock bands have low streaming numbers is just representative of the fact that less people are listening to rock music. So it's
absolutely
reflective of the size of the band.
Hey, man, I mean, rap is the new rock. You know what I mean? Rock,
absolutely.
You know, rock star.
I mean,
Post
Lil
Malone
Yachty's
said
a
it.
Rock star, man.
Yeah, exactly. Post Malone said it. You know, he stole it from Uzi, but he said it. And rap is the new rock. And it's just how it is. All right, let's move on to number 7 on the list. Asking Alexandria. I got to add an asterisk here. Asking Alexandria with Danny Warstop are number 7. So the band's new album, their self-titled record, came out. And did 22,000 copies first week. That's a drop from the last album, The Black, which did about 28,000 copies first week. But I think it's like an appropriate drop, just kind of considering the way things were going for the band. But that said, they're still at 1.3 million Spotify listeners. And success they have had that Black Veil hasn't had, or Falling hasn't had, is their single, Into the Fire, is actually climbing rock radio charts.
Yep.
And actually having some success. So we're seeing Asking with Danny returning to some sort of mild success. They're not like blowing it out of the water here, but it's enough to land them at number 7 on this list, I think.
Right. And, you know, I got to have the same caveat that I had with Black Veil with Asking because of the ticket thing. But like I said, it counted less for Asking. It's sad that these bands just kind of all across the board almost just dropped in sales, and we're just kind of averaging out whose pile of shit is bigger than the others. But like you said, Into the Fire, I still don't like that song. I don't think it's a good song. It's stalled at number 20 on rock radio, and over the last 2 weeks, it has climbed to number 13. So I think they might have a top 10 rock radio song on their hands, and maybe a top 5. You know, let's check back in a month
and
or so.
And maybe you're wrong, Tyler Sharp. Maybe it's a good song.
I will fight against that song all the way down. I think there's much better songs on their new album than that. But yeah.
What, you like the Ed Sheeran one better?
I don't know. I mean, that one's fun. I like Under Denver. Yeah. Let's just go EDM, you know? Let's bring back the electronic core, but without the core. I'm just saying.
We could not.
Yeah.
No, I was a fan of Into the Fire. I was a fan of just the rock radio direction. You know, I saw it as a good avenue for the band, and it got me excited.
Yeah.
I hope that single climbs, you know? If it gets in the top 10, I will be like, boom, success. That's good. That's all I want. Top 5, that's a big ask.
It's close. They're climbing right along with another band that we're going to talk about. And then Breaking Benjamin. Them and Asking have been like kind of dueling out position per position as they move up the chart the last 2 weeks, because Breaking put out two new songs, and the first one is just broken top 10 on rock radio. So
I would just get out of the way of Breaking Benjamin. That is just an unstoppable fucking force. You know, remember when they came back with their last album and it was like, it sold over, they got a number one record, it sold over 100,000 copies
first
like week,
and
everyone was like, where the fuck did this band come from? You know what I mean? Everyone was like, we forgot about them, and their fans didn't, you
but
know?
They did the same thing in like 2010 with Dear Agony, wasn't it? And it went straight to number one, like their big comeback, so I don't know. That's bizarre.
Was that the one that led the lead single was I Will Not Bow, yeah.
Yep.
That was a big one. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
too.
You're right. And that was after a whole member lineup change drama. Everything bad that could happen to a band happened to them. I think a label switch. And they came back and just crushed it on that record. It went gold so fast. I think it's platinum now.
Monster.
But yeah, get out of the way. Don't compete with Breaking Benjamin anymore here, Asking Alexandria. Just, you know, take your win. But I think 1.3 million Spotify streams, like their streaming numbers are really doing really solid right now. That's really impressive. People are interested to see where the band can go with Danny at this
it's
point.
It's better than Black Veil's. They're crushing Black Veil's as far as like individual song streams go. I think Black Veil only has one new song over a million on the new album, and like Into the Fire has like 7 million. I think it's getting close there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, baby, good song, right, Tyler? Good song.
No,
good song.
On the vote, I think it's a bad
song. You know,
and
one thing we didn't point out is that the Black Veil album, and not to go back, but we're going back a little here, the Black Veil album is pure trash. It's a dumpster fire.
Absolute garbage.
It's one of the worst records that is it's easily one of the worst records of the year. I mean, I know it's early in the year, but I'm confident that not a whole lot's going to come out that is worse than this Black Veil album. Every single is just garbage. Everything, it's trash, you know. And whereas Asking actually put together what at the time was a disappointing album for me, but it's at least a competent one, you know.
Good,
it's at least a well-executed one. Black Veil
Brides,
you know, the thing about them is they're just not good at music, you know.
Exactly.
They have members who, when you have members who literally can't play their instruments, you know,
yes.
I'm not going to name names. There are members in that band
Come
who
on,
don't know
man.
How to play their instruments.
We already ousted them on the show. It's okay. It's okay.
And Andy is just not that spectacular of a singer. He's not. He's not. He's not good. He's a 6 out of 10 at best. You know, tops.
Makes me want to bash my head into a wall. But yeah, the Asking album is competent. It's competent music, and the Black Veil
they're musicians.
Yes.
Whereas Black Veil are pretenders. Let's just say it. You know, Black Veil are more about the message and the look and the community whereas asking can actually make some jams, as they showed us on past albums, yeah. like, you know, Stand Up and Scream right. and Reckless and Relentless.
But yo, real quick, did you see Danny's dropping his new solo album?
You know, I saw something on Rock Sound, and I just I couldn't click on it, man. Is it gonna be country?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't even click on it either. I just saw the headline.
What happened to Charlotte?
I had the laugh. Oh, that's what I said. That was my first thought. I was like, yo, Danny, where the hell's Harlot at, man?
You're a major label band assigned to Roadrunner Records that you just, right? like, ditched? Whatever. Right? I mean, they okay. sucked, so. All
right. Yeah. All right.
Okay, let's go. Let's move on to the sixth biggest scene band. Neck Deep. Princes of Pop Punk are in here. I believe last year they were not on the list. We had them as, like, you know, sort of an honorable mention. You know, yep. we kind of predicted that their rise would happen. And they have punched their way right to number six. You know, their new album, The Peace and the Panic, 29,000 copies first week. Almost 30,000. That's huge, you know, from what they came from mm-hmm. on their last record. They blew. That's the definition of blowing the fuck up, having a first week like that. You know, they were the headlining band of Warped Tour. They had a really good Warped Tour run. They've got high streaming numbers. You know, they got about 1 million Spotify listeners right now. The album, Tyler, we both personally were not fans of, but they showed that they can kind of get in the ring with the biggest and the best of them and put up the numbers. And that's what counts. And they can still draw big crowds to their shows, and they are one of the biggest scene bands now, which is crazy because it doesn't seem like that long ago. You know, they were one of those young pop punk bands, and they were smaller than Real Friends or maybe even smaller than State Champs, and they've just blown right past all of those other pop punk bands into becoming a real blue chip AAA caliber kind of band.
I agree with everything that you said there. They have completely separated themselves from the rest of the new / old wave pop punk of 2013 to 2015.
Can we just call them the Rust Bucket Wave now?
Like, I think we need a new name.
They're all falling off.
The Rust Bucket Wave of 2013 to 2015.
Real Friends, just the going nowhere wave.
Oh, you know, man.
The old new wave.
Right. So I have to point out, like we have every time we've talked about this band, they had pre-orders live. I mean, it was the most thought out plan, most blatant way to cash grab pre-order sales ever. You know, it was just a no-brainer. They launched them before Warped Tour. They had them available at the merch table all summer long. Fans bought them off blind, you know, ambition, because the band put out a spectacular album called Life's Not Out to Get You. And
one of the best pop punk albums of the easily of the last 5 years, like,
oh,
hands down.
I would,
you know,
say
top five,
yes.
Probably. It's,
yeah,
in the top,
I mean,
five.
Top three. Yeah, just like off my head, definitely.
It's in the conversation. It's in the conversation.
It's a fantastic record. And what happens yeah. when you write a fantastic record? It sells and you get momentum. I mean, it's just,
you know,
Tyler, there's a correlation
there. Why you gotta go at my boys though? Leave them alone, okay? Like, they,
I,
you know, they did the Warped Tour thing, and you know, they had fun on Warped Tour. It's the last time a band's gonna get to do this Warped Tour run, sell a bunch of records.
Congrats,
let them have it, man.
But it's false hype. The album's
no.
shit.
Yeah, it's a bad album.
And
but,
if they would have had a normal lead up, they wouldn't have sold 29,000 first week. They would have sold, I think they would have increased right. because they just have, you know,
Can we just let Warped Tour is coming to an end? Can we just let them have the awesome Warped sales that we're probably never going to see this kind of run again?
It's,
you
not
just let them
accurate.
Have it, man.
It's false.
Just let them have it.
It's not Bam. Accurate because we're going to find out on this next Neck Deep record. They are not going to sell 29,000, and I will be very, very surprised if they break 20,000 on their next album, which means,
I mean,
they'll
unless,
have their worst debut since their debut album.
I mean, unless the lead single is like All the Small Things Part 2 or something, you know what I mean? Like,
there's just no way.
Then there's a chance there if they have a big lead
They have
single,
no rock radio success. I mean, rock radio doesn't give a shit about pop punk.
Yeah, no, there's no rock radio avenue for them, I agree. But I just think they've just cemented themselves in this solid place as a big band. They draw big crowds. I don't think I don't think we're gonna see that big of a sales drop from them.
I think we can disagree there. Pretty big sale. Like, maybe I think they're gonna do like 17,000-18,000 next album.
I don't think so. This band is, they're just on another level at this point.
No. Oh man,
anything else?
No, we gotta move on.
Anything else you gotta add to Neck Deep?
We go back and forth on Neck Deep all day, but don't believe the hype.
Let's move on to number. I mean, believe what you want, but this is a big band, and I think they're here to stay. Number five, Pierce the Veil. This is a very interesting one to talk about. I believe last year we had them at number three.
Yes.
There was a point in time when Pierce the Veil would have been number one or number two, you know, but they waited too long after Collide with the Sky, which was one of the biggest selling scene records of the last 5 years, probably. It sold over 300,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably getting close to 400,000 copies right now. It was the biggest fucking record ever. It made them fucking superstars. But the band just, you know, they waited way, way too long. And by mm-hmm. the time they put out Misadventures, the hype had kind of died. And the album sold 54,000 copies first week, which is big, and it was their biggest debut ever, but that band at one point probably could have sold like 70 or 80,000 copies, you know, at their peak. Would you agree, Tyler?
I mean, dude, I remember you and I talking once that album got announced and the lead up to it, we were thinking like 90. I mean, yeah, it was getting close to 100,000. That's where we thought that, because the hype was there at one point.
And everybody I talked to in the industry was like number one.
Yeah.
Everyone thought Pierce was going to get the number one record. Everyone was so sure of it. And they just kind of underperformed 54,000. Part of it, I think, was the Divine Zero, you know, just kind of killing some of their momentum. They released that Warped Tour single.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the album was, I've grown to like the album, you know, like I like Circles and I like, you know, some of the other songs on it. What's that one they just put out recently? They did the acoustic version.
Today I saw The Whole World.
Yeah, I actually really like that song.
Probably
and, you
the
know,
most
Peep,
little, throwback.
Yeah, Lil Peep throwback, I would agree. Yeah, and Lil Peep covered it and it was fun. Their tour situation is kind of iffy, which is again why I think they've fallen down on this list to number five. Like, we saw them playing Thousand Cap. They're playing the same size venues, you know, as like a Falling in Reverse or a Black Veil Brides. And it's like Pierce should be playing at least to 2,000 people a night, you know, I feel like.
Easily.
And they're not anymore.
You know, they did the support tour with Rise Against, but I just don't think that they're crossing over anywhere. You know, like Circles had rock radio success and it was super cool to hear Pierce the Veil on the radio.
Right.
But I don't think they sustained any momentum that they may or may not have gotten in the rock radio circles. They're still just Pierce the Veil. And when you combine that with, you know, the events that unfolded over in November and now, you know, Mike is no longer in the band for the time being.
Yeah, careful. I mean, Mike is taking a break, quote.
For the time being. Yeah.
Mike will be back.
Yeah, so right now they sit at number five, and they're not growing. That's the problem.
Yeah, they fell. They've gotten smaller. Like, we saw from the shows they played. They're just, people are less interested in Pierce the Veil than they were 2 years ago or 3 years ago, especially for that matter. And that's just the case. We've pointed out the reasons they fell. The things that are kind of holding them up here, you know, they have 1.2 million Spotify listeners.
Mm-hmm.
They still have that big Pierce brand name. There's mm-hmm. a big celebrity factor. Vic, Jaime, Tony, you know, I don't even want to say his name. My Mike is a big celebrity too, but you know, that's a complicated issue right now. We're not going to dive into. And you got to give them credit for Circles. That was a big rock radio single for them. And I didn't think I'd never hear Pierce the Veil on the radio. And to give them even more credit for that, they played a bunch of like radio station rock festivals. So, you know, I don't know like what kind of hype they maintain, but they have gotten in with those rock radio programmers. You know, they played all their, you know, X-Fest festivals, you know, and all their little bashes. So I think when the next Pierce album comes, their radio single they push might be welcomed with open arms. So,
I mean,
that, you know, just looking for some of the positives for them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the reason why they're still at number five is because this cycle wasn't a complete wash for them commercially.
No.
You know, they saw the big first week. They had success outside of the scene in a certain capacity. So that's why they're still where they're at. But I mean, we just gotta admit that Misadventures wasn't the caliber of album that Collide with the Sky was. So on this next album, they really need to deliver that caliber of songwriting.
They're not out for the count. They have a chance to come back. And in the album, it sold over 100,000 copies total, which is really good in today's day and age. But when you compare that to Collide with the Sky, ouch. That's a big nosedive. But still, any band that can sell over 100,000 copies in the industry right now, especially if you're a rock band, you're worth a lot to a lot of different, you know, agencies, labels, managers. So Pierce are still a big force to be reckoned with, and we can't count them out yet. You ready to move on, Tyler?
Yep, let's roll.
All right, number four, and I can't say it, man. You gotta say it. Number four. I'm not gonna do it. I'm not. You can say it.
All right, the fourth biggest scene band right now in January 2018 is I Prevail. How does that make you feel, Matt?
My goodness, it makes me feel, you know, like not as bad as when they announced Warped Tour was over, but
oh my god,
the same range of emotions, you know. It's where do we begin? I Prevail, bad musicians,
bad at music,
just not, they're terrible at music, they don't know how to play music, and they make the most generic, watered down copy of a copy of a copy of A Day to Remember you've ever heard. Yet their album Lifelines is it's their debut, right? Or is it their sophomore? Okay, but the first one didn't really matter, right?
Right.
I mean, Lifelines, it's their world debut, you can
right
say.
Like definitely
their debut on the world stage, sold almost 20,000 copies first week. And you might be wondering, how the fuck is this band bigger than Pierce the Veil? Which, by the way, I Prevail and Pierce the Veil share the same record label, Fearless Records. I Prevail have sold over 100,000 copies in a much shorter time than Pierce the Veil did. You know, so while and with a much smaller debut, so I Prevail debuted with less than half the record sold of Pierce, and a lot of that is owed, you know, to the fact that Lifelines produced Alone, which was a top five rock radio smash and really got the band that rock radio audience. And, you know, they got 1.2 million monthly Spotify listeners, and they're just a fucking big force. And we can't seem to dodge this one.
Yep. It's becoming more and more right in our face, the monster that is I Prevail. I mean, Lifelines sold 19,000 first week, and we thought it was crazy back then that they outsold Of Mice and Men issues Crown the Empire. Now, the album's been out for what? 14, 15 months at this point, and it's sold, 110,000 copies, somewhere around there. This band was built on a social media strategy that worked, and they got their hooks in front of the people that A Day to Remember can't right now, and that's why it's working so well. You know, like we've talked about on the show many a times before, there's something beautiful about how families are going out to see this band, and it's bringing, it brought people.
It does kind of make you want to vomit, but yeah, it is beautiful. I'll give you that.
In a scene that's just absolutely falling apart, it sucks to have to talk about a band such as I Prevail. But they're doing something that no other band is doing right now. And they've grown from nothing. You know, they proved that they weren't just a cover band. They weren't just a band who's going to be remembered for their Taylor Swift cover. They have hits.
They proved me wrong. That's for sure. You know, their tour, they're playing Thousand Caps, just like Pierce, except from what I can tell, their tour went way the fuck better than Pierce's did, you know?
I have heard that's crazy. That they fared much better than Pierce the Veil as far as touring goes in 2017.
So it's wild to think that at this point now, there's a power change at Fearless Records where you could say I Prevail is now Fearless Records' biggest band. It's not Pierce the Veil anymore. That's a big swing. Like, that is a huge swing of power on this power rankings list.
In the world did Fearless Records end up with the biggest bands in the scene? Wasn't this supposed to be Rise? Wasn't this supposed to be Rise's job to produce the scene's biggest band?
How did we get here with I Prevail at number four? That's just, you know, that's what I wonder. But here we are. And like you said, it is beautiful. it's both gross and beautiful that the music is so generic and bland and broad and lowest common denominator appealing that it is able to get the dad and the mom and the kid to all go to the show together. It's, that's nice. But yeah, it's just unfortunate that this low caliber musicianship has to be carrying it. But, you know, hey, at the end of the day, I'm rooting for the band. Any scene band, dude, I want you to have your success. And look, they're looking like, you know, the next record could fucking come out and sell like 40,000 copies first week. Man, maybe even 50.
If
you know
they
what I mean?
Play their social media well. Strategy right, I think they could do something crazy, man. Like 75.
They come out with another Alone or something even bigger, you know? Right. I mean, they got in the top five this time. Who knows? Then their next lead single could go to number one on rock radio.
They have all the connections now. You know, as long as they just deliver that generic chorus hook, then they're good to go. Yeah. But I Prevail are the product of a dying scene, and you got to give it to them.
That's they're kind of getting out as the scene's like going down on fire. They're kind of like stepping out and grabbing onto that radio lifeboat, you know?
They have to because there's nothing
left.
They're
going to survive
here
at rock radio.
Yeah, there's
okay,
nothing left.
Anything else, Tyler?
I don't think so. I don't like talking about this band.
Number three, All Time Low. This is an interesting one because All Time Low, I think we have them basically in the same spot as number three. They were around here, number three, number
four.
They were
number two last year.
Okay, so they've dropped down one, which seems appropriate. Future Hearts was a complete... Not Future Hearts, I'm sorry.
Last Young Renegade.
Last Young Renegade was a complete disaster and a tragedy for this band. They sold 35,000 copies first week, which is huge compared to these other bands, but for All Time Low... That's really bad. Future Hearts, the record before it. How much did that sell, Tyler?
Well, so Last Young Renegade Traditional did 30,000 first week, and it did 33 with streaming, and then Future Hearts did 80 Traditional, 85 with streaming. So roughly 50K drop both ways.
Yeah. So it's just, I mean, it was a disaster as far as an album goes. None of their singles sticked, and they kept trying to make singles stick. And it was just getting to the point where it was embarrassing. You know, like they're pushing Good Times on top 40 radio. Like
just
that was
sad.
A waste of money.
Just
you know what I mean?
Sad.
Like who? What a waste of everyone's time. Why even try that? And the record was bad. But despite them putting out a really terrible record, they're still All Time Low. They have 2.8 million Spotify listeners. That blows anyone else on this. That more than doubles anyone else we've mentioned on this list so far. They still play big venues. They still have a crazy fan base. Their fan base is just still super engaged and huge. And they're still just that legacy and the celebrity of Alex and Jack is still carrying this band and keeping them as one of the biggest bands in the scene. So I think number three is a very appropriate spot for them at this point. They're still at that level where they're, you know, they're bigger than your typical scene band, but they're not there with a Fall Out Boy or a Panic or one of the bigger Fueled by Ramen bands, you know? They're still in that in-between stage, kind of. Maybe they've been knocked down a peg with this record, but All Time Low can rebound. You know, they can put out another pop-punk thing that everyone's going to love and appeal to their core fan base, and they're right back in it.
Man, I don't know about that last statement, but... I'll just say shouts to the back catalog on streaming services. I mean, I listen to the Put Up or Shut Up EP at least once a month.
And that's
shouts to Jay-Z Ray, Coffee Shop Soundtrack.
They're like Blink, you know?
Right.
They're like a mini Blink. Like, they're just always going to be a big band.
Right.
You know? They put out another garbage record next cycle, and they'll still be on this list.
Yeah, right.
It will take a lot of things to move All Time Low significantly further down this list. You
for
know?
Sure. And it was, you know, a funny thing to mention is we talk about on the show, we talk a lot about how bands, when they start doing anniversary shit and focusing more on their past than their future, it means that their past is brighter than what their future looks like. And All Time Low have been doing So Wrong It's Right anniversary shows in the UK super late last year, and I think they're doing some stuff right now or whatever. They just announced it, which is funny because the album is now going to be 11 years old and they're still doing 10-year anniversary shit for it. But they did that super last minute, and it's boiling over into the next year because they were planning on having an actual, like, successful cycle on this new album, which has turned out to be a complete failure. So they've had to resort to make some money. They've had to resort back to So Wrong It's Right and the shit that everyone actually wants to hear. And they've had to relearn how to play all those songs.
And, you know, maybe this all, if this all had gone right, like, you know, they signed a Feel by Ramen. It was the perfect match.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, had Dirty Laundry took off as a single, or they had actually made a good record.
Right.
We're looking at a very different situation where they blow up and maybe they're on top 40 radio and maybe they're positioning themselves to play a small arena tour. You know,
right.
They were really could have been there.
Instead, we're playing anniversary shit.
Right. Yeah. We're back. So that's where All Time Low are. They're still All Time Low. They ain't going anywhere, but they didn't grow. Number two, what is the second biggest band in the scene, Tyler Sharp?
So this is a bit different from last year. It is A Day to Remember.
So A Day to Remember had an interesting cycle off this latest record, Bad Vibrations. I would call it disappointing. It was not as big of a deal as Common Courtesy. You know, I think the numbers are hard to find, but I think Common Courtesy did around 90,000 copies first week.
Right.
The band
there.
Were just flying fucking high. They were the biggest thing ever. They were obviously the biggest scene band. You know, they have their own festival. They're huge. But when Bad Vibrations came out, it sold 60,000 copies first week, which seemed a little low, didn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was a 30,000 unit drop. And we were thinking, I can remember you and I talking on the campaign up to that album. We were thinking 100K. Like, why not?
Oh, yeah, easily. You know? They were easily a 100K band. They're A Day to fucking Remember.
Right.
And you know what it was those Bad Vibrations singles, you know, while they were interesting and different and dark, they just weren't, you know, the blowout, big, fun singles everyone really wants from A Day to Remember, you know?
They need All I Want Part 2. And
right.
Those Bad Vibrations singles were not that.
And if you're going to do heavy, do it right, like Second Sucks.
Exactly.
You know? That got everyone so stoked for What Separates Me From You. And they just kind of were in between on Bad Vibrations. And, you know, what they really did here was they tried to make their radio rock record. And to give them credit, they had success. Paranoia was a huge rock radio single.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say probably the biggest rock radio single. God damn it. You got to give it to I Prevail. I think the I Prevail song was bigger. A Day to Remember's Paranoia was probably like the second biggest rock radio single on this list. It was just played all the time, and it did really well for the band. The record sold over 100,000 copies. They're mm-hmm. right there with Pierce as mm-hmm. far as sales go. That's significantly lower than what Common Courtesy ended up selling, which I think was closer to 200,000 copies.
Right.
But they still got over 2 million Spotify listeners. They're still A Day to Remember. They're still a huge fucking band. And they're definitely not out for number one. Like, you know, next year,
right.
Things could swing and they could be number one again. They were our number one and they have been dethroned. They're not number one anymore. They're number two.
Right. And, you know, they have 2 million monthly Spotify listeners and they are 100% off cycle at this point.
Right.
So I have not heard anything. I have heard no whispers.
I mean, Tyler Sharp, you want to be a jackass? You want to shout like a homesick back catalog while we're here? Like,
I mean, real quick? I mean, I listened to Homesick in full last week. No shame, no shame. And I'm sure many other people did as well. But yeah, they have a killer back catalog. But I think there are a lot of people that are actually still listening to Bad Vibrations. For whatever reason, they sent that shitty Same About You song to radio. It ain't doing nothing. It can't break 40 on rock radio.
They tried with Bullfight as well, which
and that
I think
made it to 20. You know,
20. It limped to 20.
Right.
Yeah, and it was just gone,
and then
like
it just fell right off. But the next album is so important for this band. I really think, you know, with the last album, they lied and said that they had no
album
planned. And they had no album planned and they had no idea what anyone was talking about. And they had that bullshit attitude. Same bullshit that they have with Common Courtesy. I mean, it's the same shit over and over and over. So when A Day to Remember goes silent, we can expect an album. That's what we've, you know, as far as learned behavior goes. I don't know. Late summer release, maybe, if I had to just throw a dart on the board. But this next album is going to be very important for this band. And you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
If they could write another All I Want, I think they're going to be in a really good spot. But
well, here's what's interesting about Bad Vibrations is I think they hadn't quite finished the victory lawsuit. They were still embroiled in it. So I don't believe they were allowed to sign to a record label. So what they ended up doing was they partnered with Epitaph Records for this release, which not a lot of power there, Epitaph Records, you know? And it's impressive that A Day to Remember were able to get a strong radio single like Paranoia, because Epitaph doesn't have a good track record of pushing radio singles. So they didn't really have big machinery behind them, you know, and they made this rock radio transition where they kind of set themselves up as a radio rock band and less of a scene band than they had been before. So they're in a position now where they won the lawsuit with Victory. Every major label wants to sign them, right? You know, and it's a matter of, are they going to do it or not? And if A Day to Remember sign with a major label and get that huge push, we could see them becoming one of the biggest rock bands around today, period.
Absolutely.
It's possible.
Yeah, that's a great point that I tend to forget to bring up when we're talking about A Day to Remember, but they are completely free from Victory Records. Yeah. And it's so weird to talk about, because they've just been synonymous. You're always like, oh, A Day to Remember have that, you know, ball and chain of Victory Records tied to their ankle. That's just how it's always been. But yeah, I mean, they got paid $4 million in that lawsuit. Right. And it was a pretty unprecedented decision by the courts in that one. But you're right. They're free agents, and they totally could sign to a major. And that just makes me even more excited to see what A Day to Remember this next album.
And I could see a big one. Like, I could see a Sony or a Columbia or Interscope wanting to sign them. I mean, as far as I know, yeah, not a Roadrunner, not a smaller major like an FBR or something. As far as I knew back in the day, Interscope was courting them, you know, way back in the day. We're talking like What Separates Me from You time. And that was kind of behind of what might have caused some of the drama with Victory. So if Interscope's still interested, that's very interesting. If all of a sudden we have them, you know, on the Interscope Geffen A&M label group, you know, a very powerful force.
And
see what this band could do. They could tear shit up, you know.
Totally. With the right music, and the right backing, this band has 100% potential to be able to do something big. And from what I heard back when the cycle was rolling out from Bad Vibrations, parties were not happy on either side of the band label board.
You know, Epitaph just wasn't the right fit. It was a weird move, and you know we saw Sleeping do that for one record.
Yeah.
You know, and Sleeping did that for Madness, and they were like, Epitaph just can't really push a massive band. Falling Universe is kind of where they cap out as far as big bands go. They can't push you to that next level. And I think A Day to Remember I've learned that lesson. But that's ultimately why they're number two and not number one this year. Okay, the number one biggest scene band, Tyler Sharp. I'm going to give you the honor of naming them.
This is the band right here, Bring Me the Horizon. And I'm sure you could have assumed that by now. This is it, man. Biggest band in the scene.
They have arrived. It's undeniable. So that's The Spirit, their latest record. We started off with Drown, which was just the biggest song ever, you know, the best sort of lead single to ever happen one of the best lead singles to ever happen in the history of the scene. At the time when the scene is going down, Bring Me gave us hope, and That's The Spirit came out and did 60,000 copies first week, which was huge. The record has gone on to sell around 180,000 copies total in the U.S., which blows away any other band on this list. I mean, I think just on record sales alone, you can be like, there you go. We beat y'all.
Right.
They almost sold double A Day to Remember. They sold, you know, way more than I Prevail, way more than Pierce. They're up there. They have 2.5 million Spotify listeners. And also, they had radio success out of nowhere. Happy Song was a huge radio song. Probably right there with Paranoia and A Day to Remember. Happy Song was right there. It was a big rock radio song for them. So not only did they grow and mature as a band sonically, but they also hit the radio market and pleased their core fans. And they're just in this really good space where they're just ready to just blow up even more.
Didn't Throne get some spins too on rock radio?
I believe it, yeah. And it also was a very good streamer for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's their biggest song on Spotify right now, and it has 89 million streams.
That's absurd. That's like an Ariana Grande song. Like, that's absurd.
And I mean, there's not one song on That's the Spirit under 10,000 or 10 million. Sorry.
You were at the AP office when I think I told you what I was like, this is the best song I've ever heard in my life.
I think we talked about that last episode. I was sitting there, I was just getting ready to leave. It was the day after APMA's 2015 and that song dropped. And we got back to the office after lunch and you're like, this is the best song I've ever heard in my entire life.
After one listen, yeah. I was so in.
Yeah.
Just to hear them go Linkin Park. And they did so many unique things on that record. They went Linkin Park on that song. They make Drown, which is kind of this woozy emo thing that was awesome. They just, Happy Song is a rock radio. They just did everything. They did whatever, they showed, they really flexed their range as musicians.
Totally.
And creative individuals.
And you and I have put our lines in the sand of where we want this band to go moving forward. I want them to go more Doomed, Follow You, Oh No, to a lesser extent, right. Drown, and you want them to go more happy song.
And I'm just like,
True Friend.
Give me Throne or Throne. I'm just hitting lines of Throne. Just
Throne Part 2 through 10 throne for the next
two,
album.
Throne Part 3. Drown Part 2. Yeah.
So I think they want to be a big band, and I think that their team behind them is going to, help them realize that rock radio is not necessarily the place to go. I think we're going to still get those bangers, but yeah. I'm not sure if... I think we're going to see more of a Doom-type song be pushed as the first single.
It's almost like rock radio, the success with Happy Song was just kind of a bonus, like a byproduct.
Exactly.
That wasn't the main story here. The main story here was that they just became a big band with a big following. And maybe we see them play Coachella, next year or something. Like, they want that sort of... They want to make that sort of move, so...
Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's possible,
We were hearing whispers about that from their management back in when That's the Spirit dropped in 2015. Yeah. Like, they wanted to be a Coachella core. Like, that, yeah.
They have they're under Raw Power Management, which is a very powerful management company that has their back. So,
right.
And they're signed right now to, I think, Columbia Records.
Yep.
No? Really? Columbia?
I'm pretty sure it was Columbia.
Yeah, well, if they're signed to Columbia Records, I'd say that's the second biggest record label out there behind Atlantic right now.
On their Spotify page, I don't have the record label put up, but the credits go to Sony Music, so.
Which is the owner of Columbia, so that would make sense.
Yeah.
So they're on Columbia, which is at a time, I don't know, it's either Atlantic or Columbia is the biggest record label. So they have big machinery behind them, pushing them too. And they have a good vision, it seems. And, I think they're probably just going to do something fucking new and cool on the next record that will just totally surprise us.
That keyboardist, man. That keyboardist knows how to write the bangers, man. Jordan, he knows how to write them. So I can't wait. This is my most anticipated of the year. That's the Spirit was my most anticipated of 2015. This is my most anticipated of 2018. I am so excited to see what this band's going to do. Because it's not going to sound like That's the Spirit. They're going to come back with a whole new approach. The rollout's going to be massive. Do you remember how excited, how big that rollout for that album felt when Happy Song dropped, like on that Sunday? Oh my gosh, dude. It felt like Twitter just shut down for Bring Me. So I'm so excited for this band and this album. And I'm
a band that was once a grimy deathcore band. which is just hilarious to point out.
Shouts to 2006, man. Count Your Blessings.
They've done it all.
Yeah,
they were a grimy deathcore band. They were a really fun, bouncy metalcore band.
Yep.
They were kind of an emo metalcore band, and they were kind of this weird thing on Sempiternal that was fucking awesome. And now here they are as this multifaceted rock band.
Monster, man.
Yeah, just that can pretty much do anything at this point. As long as we keep Ollie Sykes away from covering Linkin Park songs at the show, because I don't think he did a good job, and I was upset with that. I thought he could have did.
Come on, man! Why couldn't we just forget about that?
I couldn't. I can't let him go. One Step Closer. I love that song. I love Linkin Park. Ollie, I expect more of you if you're going to do something that important.
I was ready to forget that. But
yeah,
super stoked for this. I'm glad that
that's the thing about Ollie. We gotta hope the rock star. He's getting a little bit of that rock star fucking fever. I feel like it's really seemed like it's starting to get to his head. thinking you can just walk out there at a Chester Bennington tribute show and not fucking give it your all, you know?
Come
I don't know.
On, man. We know he's a cock star. We know. We've seen that
star.
Dude behind the scenes.
The guy
I
who
mean,
called
5 years
out Kellen
ago.
Quinn, the guy who called out Kellen Quinn for being a cock star, the guy who invented the term cock star, is becoming one. And so I just hope his bandmates can keep him in check, you know?
I mean, he's going to need
you know?
It because they're
I mean,
the
you think he's
going to
jump
band.
On Coldplay's table again in an award show?
Dude, I fucking hope so, man. That shit was so awesome, man. I was at AP when that happened. You weren't. And I just, that whole morning after that happened, it was just, traffic was off the charts. It was the coolest fucking thing. More scene bands need to do shit that we could talk about instead of releasing shitty albums.
Note to scene trivia here, but I believe the first episode of Note to Scene, we talk about that story of Ali jumping on that table.
Yeah, did we talk about the biggest moments of 2016?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
That was up
so
there.
So if you want to go back to the
ones.
First episode, which I don't recommend you do, because we probably didn't know what we were doing back then. That was 50 episodes ago. That is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please take the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars and we will love you. If you have any questions for the show, which we will be getting back to listener questions, feel free to email them to notescene@gmail.com and we will happily talk about them on the show. All right, see you next week.